Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Tina S. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, April the 23rd, 2026. Today we are reading from the Big Book. We are on page 33 in More About Alcoholism, first full paragraph, starting with, "This case contains a powerful lesson," reading through one paragraph, ending with, "That someday we will be immune to alcohol." And today's readers are... for the 12 steps, Martha Z, 12 traditions, Cindy H, our newcomer greeter, Karen W, second hour host is Robin L, and readers of the text are, reader of the text this morning, page 33 is Kathy M, page 164 is Liz S, and Martha's our backup and she's going to read the 12 steps. Thank you all. And the reference number for yesterday, Wednesday, April the 22nd, or 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,390, that's 23390, and the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,391, that's 23391. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who through shared experience, strength, and hope are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Martha Z to read the 12 steps. Please read, Martha.
Good morning, Tina. So grateful you're here.
I'm Barbara Wynn here for the 12 steps. Hello?
Go ahead, Barbara.
Tina,
go ahead, Barbara.
You want me to go ahead?
Okay.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Number one.
Do you have them, Barbara, or should Martha do it? You got it?
Yeah, I'm here. I got it.
Okay, go ahead.
Number Thanks. One. Yes.
Martha, you want to go ahead and read the 12 steps, please?
For Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our life had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we'd harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Martha Z. And next, Cindy H. is going to read the 12 traditions. Please read, Cindy.
Good morning. This is Cindy H., a recovering, not cured, compulsive overeater in Troy, Michigan. Here's our 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Hey, thanks so much, Cindy.
Yeah. This is Barbara W. I was trying to find my notes, ma'am. OA.
Yes, thank you. Martha already had them up, so thank you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book means to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 33, the first paragraph, and I will now ask Kathy M. to start reading. Please read, Kathy.
Good morning. Can I be heard?
Yes, I can hear
you. Good morning. This is okay, fantastic. This is Kathy M., recovered compulsive overeater in Michigan. This case contains a powerful lesson. Most of us have believed that if we remained sober for a long stretch, we could thereafter drink normally. But here is a man who at 55 years found he was just where he had left off at 30. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. I had that last sentence double highlighted in my Big Book. Obviously, I've read it multiple times. Actually, it's triple. There's yellow, there's orange, and there's pink. Immune, I think, is an interesting word to use here because we use it when we talk about diseases or medications or antibiotics. And I think it is very apropos in this situation. We are never going to be immune from this disease of overeating or of compulsive eating has has us in his grasp, and we cannot get rid of it. We can utilize and allow a higher power to help us to surrender to it. But surrendering is the only way that we have a daily reprieve or a daily immunity, if you want to say, from the disease. And I know this from personal experience. I have tested it many, many times. Every relapse was worse than the previous for many years. And I think that the recovery from each relapse, the getting back into my abstinence, was always the most challenging aspect of a relapse. And I think that at this point in my life, I have completely surrendered, although there are occasions when I'm still tempted. And I have to remember, and I have to pause. And thank goodness I have developed that ability to pause and think before I do things, now whether it's eating or taking an action that might be inappropriate. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Kathy M. Okay. Let's see here. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience. So if you've shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back. And now I will take a list of names. Give me the first name and the first initial of your last name. Who would like to share on this paragraph?
Rick J.
Nancy P.
Joe B. Lisa Joe B.
Monica T.
Okay, here's who I got. I have, I think it's Fred K, Nancy P, Lisa Joe B, Monica T.
And Barbara W.
And Barbara
Vassa
W.
Vassa O.
Did you?
Kathy R.
Kelly S.
Kelly S.
18 is Rick J, not Fred.
Oh, Rick J. Okay, thanks, Rick.
Kathy R.
I got Rick J, Kathy R. Rick J, Nancy P, Lisa Joe B, Monica T, Barbara W, Vasa O, Kelly S, and Kathy R. All right, sounds like a good lineup to start with. Okay, let's go. Let's get going. Okay, Rick, get us started, and then we're followed by Nancy P. Please share, Rick.
Hey, Tina, thanks for your service. This is Rick J. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. Yeah, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. And if I'm planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservation of any kind or any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. And I really appreciate the lead share. You know, it's, you know, I will, I can become recovered from the mental obsession through connection with a higher power. You know, and a subsequent spiritual awakening by working the steps and remaining abstinent. But it's the connection with the higher power that can relieve the mental obsession. I will never be cured from the physical allergy that compels me to eat compulsively with certain foods and ingredients. And that, the any lurking notion, no reservation, yeah, I mean, it's already told me, you know, that there's no control. They kind of hammered that in on the first page of this chapter on page 30. You know, it mentions the word control, you know, like four or five times. And also, you know, it's like we are beyond human aid. So if I truly am going to stop eating compulsively, if that's what I'm wanting, which today I'm so grateful that I am in recovery. But that lurking notion, when I first started this, it's there still has to be no lurking notion, because once a compulsive eater, always a compulsive eater. I will never change. That is carved in stone, right? All I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition, just like it tells us later on, you know, and into action. So, just grateful to be here with all of you. With that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Rick J. Is that North Carolina? Yeah, I forgot to say, tell us where you're calling from. That was Rick J. Now we have Nancy P., followed by Lisa Jo B. Please.
Yeah, it's North Carolina.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Nancy P., recovered in actually Cambridge, Massachusetts this morning. So I love the word lurk. Just, it's spelled cool, it sounds cool, but it means to hide and wait to do harm. And until I dialed into this meeting in December of 2017, I had a lurking notion. And it wasn't even lurking. It was like right at home, right next to me on the couch. You know, it was right there. Like, don't, you know, probably not you, but maybe not this, not right now, but soon type of notion. You know, I don't lurk today. I am what I am. I'm out and proud as a compulsive overeater of the hopeless variety and as an agnostic. And I don't lurk. And, you know, if I meet a friend for lunch, I don't lurk. I say, if I'm early and I'm waiting, I say, here I am. And if she's there first and I look around, I say, here, there you are. I'll be right over. I mean, what would I do? Bash her over the head and steal her wallet and buy my own lunch? I mean, I don't lurk anymore. And lurking is like a shapeshifter because it's disguised as wishing and wanting. And I wished and wished and wished, and I wanted and wanted and wanted just not to be afflicted with this disease. I didn't care about anything except, I mean, I certainly didn't want to be fat, which I was, but I also didn't want to have my mind not at rest. And that was the worst part of it, that even when I wasn't eating compulsively, my mind was, when am I going to get fat? When am I going to start eating? I hope I don't. You know, it was the hiding, sneaking, cheating, lying. That stuff was always in full blast. And, you know, it brings me to the first step is admitted we were powerless over food. I think admit is a grudging word. I mean, when I sort of admitted, yeah, all right, admit you're wrong. Okay, I'm wrong. But secretly, I would think I was not wrong. It's a grudging word, and I had to embrace who I was. That's why today I'm out and proud. I'm free of any fear of other people's opinions about how I work my program and what I say and how I behave with other people as a sponsor. I am free today, and it started with one thing and one thing only. Say it with me, everybody. Surrender, surrender, surrender. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Nancy P. from Massachusetts. Next, we have Lisa Joby, followed by Monica T. Please share, Lisa.
Thank you so much. This is Lisa Joby from Colorado. And this just reminds me of the fact that I have bipolar disorder, and in my 20s, I stopped taking my meds whenever I felt better, and within a few months, I would land up in the psych ward after a manic episode every single time. Like, I didn't learn until I was 28 that I really ought to stay on my medication if I were to live a higher quality of life. And with the food, it's been a pattern. I'm like a, what do you call it? A relapser, like a trillion times over. And every 3 weeks to 2 months in the past, I started thinking that I've got this. I don't need help. I need to prove this on my own. And it's really the same thing, like self-will run riot. Not accepting God's help, I had to prove to myself that I could do this all on my own for no reason. I mean, it's just like, you know, I would beg God, please heal me, fix me. But I refused to really look at the fact that the solution was in the form of a search and rescue party and working these 12 steps. And that it's a daily reprieve. I don't need to start bragging or being swept off my feet by a few days of recovery. I need to stay humble. I need to keep my feet on the ground, and I need to keep working this program, including entire abstinence. And the funny thing is when I'm really involved in the program, I like it. I love this community. And I love reading and studying the big book. So with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Lisa Joby from Colorado. Next, we have Monica T, followed by Barbara W. Please share, Monica.
Good morning, Tina. Good morning, everyone. This is Monica T from Florida. So here we are in the chapter, more about alcoholism, or as I heard the other day, more about my mental obsession, or even clearer for me, more about my crazy thinking. And they start out, this case contains a powerful lesson. You know, they've been hammering things home to us, things I didn't like to hear, weren't too fun sounding. Most of us have believed that if we remain sober for a long stretch of, we could thereafter drink normally. You know, most of us have gone through, now my experience here, I went through all kinds of things, pays and ways and therapy and all kinds of stuff out there. And the thinking out there is that, you know, all right, you do all this, you're successful, moderation. But, and there's the next sentence, it starts with a but. But we're not there. I am not in that group. And I had 50-something years of experience of seeing what happened every single time, whether it was one day off or a year or 2 years off, that once I picked up again, it was worse than it was before. And they're hammering to me, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Oh, man, that doesn't sound like much fun, but you know, it's the truth. It's what I am. And today, you know, that's okay. And actually, this has been a blessing for me. If we are planning to stop, there must be no reservation, no hiding back of any kind, nor any lurking, lying in wait to ambush me. Notion that someday we will be immune, I'll be resistant to alcohol. You know? Wow. Well, I haven't been able to do this on my own, that's for darn sure. And I tried for many years. And I understood about this. And, you know, okay, next time I get a crazy thought, I'll say, hey, you're a crazy thought. I know what you are. You're trying to sabotage me, and I'm not going to do it. But my silly little mind says, oh, my God, you're just the best thought I've had in a long time. And I believe the lie you're telling me, and off I go to the races. So I have a disease. And, of course, there's two parts. You know, the physical part, I can't put any of the foods that I'm allergic to into my body. Or I'm just going to start eating, and who knows when I'll stop. But the hardest part is this lurking notion in my brain. And working through these steps or doing what we, the first 100 here, are telling me and trying to soak it in is what has worked, working the steps, and God help me. You know, that's the powerful answer there. God has the solution for me. And with that, I'll pass.
Perfect timing. Thanks so much, Monica T. from Florida. Next, we have Barbara W., followed by Boss O. Please share, Barbara. Let us know where you're calling from.
Good morning. I'm Barbara, compulsive overeater. Sorry I was late this morning for the steps, but I just wanted to share about when I used to be, I remember when I was an alcoholic and I came into AA and I went through with the drinking and I got recovery from alcohol and I was blessed to not to drink anymore. But do you know, after that, I didn't even realize that I knew I had a problem with eating because I was overweight, but I didn't know it was that bad. Because they say when you put down one habit, here goes another habit facing you. But that's exactly what happened to me. And they also said in AA that if you can drink, my hat goes off to you. But there's no hat going off with me with this food, because food for me was the hardest thing for me to put down in eating. The thing, the junk food, the food that I knew, the sugar, the flour. But you know, as I kept coming and everything, and God had me and having people in my life to tell me and hearing the 12th step of OA, I had learned that I had a problem with food and I had to learn how to eat because I didn't know how to eat. This is the problem. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to eat. But do you know, when I got into AA, I changed. God had changed me and taught me that thing that I had to put the junk food down, and I had to get a food plan and eat food that was going to be good for me. And watched sugar and anything that I would pick up now, it was just like alcohol. If I pick it up again, I know just what happens to me. And it makes me feel so different when I pick up something with a lot of sugar in it and flour. I don't feel the same anymore. And that is a good thing, because that is to remind me that you are not supposed to have it. That's it for me. You're not supposed to have it. And that's what's keeping me from being, keeping me in recovery and keeping me eating the right type of food. And it's a job. Because I'm 71 years old, I live alone, I have to prepare my food. And the foods that we would eat out are not the same as the foods that we have to make for our own self, unless we find a good place that has the type of food that we can eat. And that's not the same, because they don't even have vegetables anymore. And I have to have vegetables because it's nourishing. And I didn't never want it, was a vegetable person. So I'm just so happy that there's so much food on my plan that I can eat to fill me up. And there's so many good people in the program that I can meet and talk with, and I can listen and hear how to eat and stay absent on my food plan. So I just think, and it's God doing it. It is. He's helping me. He's reminding me. And the 12 steps is there to help me to realize that I have this disease and I have to work at it every day the rest of my life. Thanks for letting me share.
Perfect timing, Barbara. Where are you calling from, Barbara?
New Jersey. I'm in New Jersey, Warren County. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks so much. Okay, yeah, next we have Boss O.
This morning, but I'm sorry. Okay.
No problem. Thank you. Next with Vasa O, followed by Kelly S. Please share, Vasa.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Vasa O, calling from Port Charlotte, Florida. Thank you, Tina, for your service. And I am grateful, recovered compulsive overeater. And I had no clue about Overeaters Anonymous. I had no clue about the allergy of the body. I had no clue about the disease. I was so grateful to find out what my problem was. I've been struggling with the food addiction for 25 years of my life and tried to put it down, pick it up, anorexia, bulimia, tried it all, and nothing worked. And I was grateful that I was letting the program. And this is more about alcoholism. And I don't wanna forget where I came from. And I'm terrified. I don't want to say, well, that's it, I'm done. And that was my intention when I came to the program. Oh, I'm just going to lose the weight and I'm going to leave. I'm fine. I thank God I kept on staying and hearing about the disease of compulsive overeater. And the most important thing that I heard from my sponsor, the only way we can put this down by surrendering to a power greater than ourselves. Vasa, that's the only way we can do it. And surrendering to the 12 steps. And I was willing and I was ready to do whatever it took. I did not want to die. I was 41 years old when I came to this program. And I didn't think I was going to make it till I was 50 years old. And I had children, young children. I had a 3-year-old child. I remember saying, you know, I'm going to die. What is this child going to do? And anyways, I'm so grateful that I do have a power greater than myself, because by my own willpower, it was not working. And I used that my power for many, many, many years. So I will never leave, because I also hear from people that lose their abstinence and they think they're cured, they're fine, and it's 10 times harder to get it back. And I learned from those people. We learn from each other. I don't want to ever go back there, because I don't want to start all over again. It might not be another start for me. Thanks, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Vasa O in Florida. Next, we have Kelly S., followed by Kathy R., then we'll take some more names. Please share, Kelly.
Hey, good morning, Tina. Thanks for your service. Hey, guys, it's Kelly, EYS, from Tulsa, Oklahoma, recovered compulsive overeating bulimic. So first of all, I wanted to share on that part of the bottom part, you know, if we are planning to stop drinking. If we are, I wanted to, there must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that we'll be immune to alcohol. So I've been around these rooms for four freaking decades, and for real, one of the things we'd say is, just for today, can you not have a cookie? Just for today, can you not have that bagel? Just for today. Maybe tomorrow, but just for today, could you get through it? Well, you know what I've learned is, just for today is how I'm living life. It's not about putting down the food. This big book makes it clear. I have a physical allergy. It says I have to concede to my innermost self. No reservation. No lurking notion. It is making it clear. I can never, ever. So I can't have that cookie tomorrow. I can't have that bagel tomorrow. I will never be able to ingest those foods, no matter how long, no matter how hard I work. Those things set me off. And also, for me, I'm volume. So volume sets me off. Those are things I will never be immune from. So it's not just get through today, white knuckle it, maybe tomorrow. No. And I heard that message for years. So grateful to be back in this big book and hearing the true message of this physical allergy. And but I wanted to share my personal experience here. Most of us have believed that if I have remained abstinent and recovered for a long stretch of time, now I can just start doing things more normally, whatever that means, right? I mean, I don't have to be so disciplined anymore. I mean, I don't have to work with people that often, right? I mean, I've got one person I'm working with. I'm going to some meetings. My prayer and meditation, I do it most of the days. It's a little bit shorter. And seriously, do I have to weigh and measure all the time? I've been doing this for so long, pretty much eyeball what 4 ounces is, right? I mean, I've been recovered for 5 years. I know what the book says. I get it, right? And then I slowly start getting back. And I heard a speaker say, we start to let the gifts of our recovery take away our recovery. And I start to think I don't have to do as much. And you know what? I do. And that's where I get back in relapse. And then I slowly am back into the food. And all of a sudden, then I'm picking up that cookie and that bagel going, what happened? And I look back and it's been this progression of thinking, I didn't have to do as much because I've been abstinent. I'm recovered. Don't you know that? And I start to rest on my laurels. And in a short time, I'm as bad as ever, actually always worse. So I have to know I can never ingest those foods. I can never not weigh and measure for me because it sets off that phenomenon of craving. I can never let up on my disciplines and my daily actions because these are what keep me on the beam, on the steps, so I can stay close to my God. And with that, I pass. Thanks, Tina.
Thanks so much, Kelly EYS from Oklahoma. Before we hear from Kathy R., let me tell you where we're reading from. We are on page 33 in chapter more about alcoholism. The first full paragraph starting with, this case contains a powerful lesson, ending with that someday we will be immune to alcohol. So please share with us, Kathy, then we'll take another list.
Thank you. This is Kathy R. Hello, everybody. This is Kathy R. from Massachusetts, compulsive overeater. Heard a lot of great shares today. So when I read this paragraph yesterday, it made me think of a weight loss clinic that I had gone to years and years ago before program. And for some reason, I had told everybody at work that I was going to it. And so I had my last clinic visit. I was working on the evening shift, so I went to the clinic visit, then I went to work. And I had reached whatever goal I had set. And when I walked into work, my coworkers had bought me a large celebratory cake. And I remember I looked at it and I thought, I can't eat that. Why would they do this? But I ate it anyways. And I was off and running. And I don't think the weight stayed off for more than 20 minutes. You know, all that work, Before I knew what I had, before I knew about this disease, I still remember how fast and strong the food cravings did come back. And so this story, my story and the story in the big book are crucial in that they show me how quickly the mental obsession and the allergy of the body can return in a more advanced state than ever before. And it proves, which I've already heard on this meeting, once a compulsive eater, always a compulsive overeater. So now I understand that in program, I accept my disease and I experience a new freedom. As long as I remember, I can never safely eat certain foods. I stay in the steps and trust God to guide me throughout each day. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Kathy R. from Massachusetts. Okay. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you've shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back and we could take about five names. If I can give you your first name, first initial of your last name, who would like to share?
Rivka R.
Jason K.
Oregon.
Mary Jo P.
Esther K.
Mary Jo P.
Esther K.
Oh, my God, was Rivka R. At, is that Esther K?
Yes.
Okay, but Rivka R., Esther K., who is from Oregon?
Liz S.
Liz S. So,
Bungie.
I got Rivka, who?
Jason KP.
Got Jason, but who was that before you, Jason? Who shared?
Bonnie B.
Okay. Okay, let's stop there, and if we have time, we will get another share or so. Okay. Rivka R., I'm going to start us off. Please share.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much, Tina, for your service and all the wonderful shares and everyone on the line. It's Rivka R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Baltimore, Maryland. I know that we all have, like, different experiences with food, and, you know, some people may not need to, like, you know, plan and weigh and measure and all that, but I just wanted to share my experience because maybe it will help somebody. I knew deep inside I would never be able to eat alcoholic foods again. Like, that was seared into my consciousness. That was a no-brainer, okay? But I did have a lurking notion that I could eat abstinent foods without always, like, planning and measuring and weighing. Like, that was a behavior that I really wasn't ready to admit that I needed all the time. And it was that, you know, it was a lack of surrender in that area to God's will for the way my brain is you know, wired, that, you know, would always lead to a lack of serenity around food. And I was actually, like, perplexed by that, like, and why, you know, I'm not eating alcoholic foods, why does that behavior, why is that important in my life? And I actually asked ChatGPT, like, what's going on with that, you know, and the answer was, like, really stunning for me. It said, you know, in people who are vulnerable to compulsive patterns around food, your brain's dopamine system, the same system involved in addiction, is strongly activated by uncertainty. When you eat from a loose plan, like a bowl of salad, a protein, a carb, your brain is still actively regulating, which keeps the reward system on, which drives wanting more. When you weigh and measure, you remove that uncertainty. The decision is made in advance, and that quiets the dopamine-driven seeking loop. So, you know, my particular brain, like, regulates with structure and clarity and pre-commitment, you know, and now the problem is, how do I keep that clarity? You know, I can't, with knowledge alone, that does not treat my addiction. So, you know, if I wasn't a compulsive overeater, you know, that maybe that would stop me. But being a compulsive overeater, I have a mental obsession, and that's the real disease. Like this, you know, the real problem driving that is self-centeredness. So the only solution that I have is God-centeredness. Like, I cannot recover myself with myself. I can only recover myself through surrender to my Creator and His will for me. And He did not give me my operating system, because I really believe this, He did not give me my operating system as a punishment because I was a bad girl and I ate too much when I was little. You know, He gave me my operating system so I can get closer to Him. And so my particular operating system that I need total, there can be no lurking notion in my brain that I can just have some kind of loose structure. It doesn't work for my brain. And that
gentle reminder.
Willing, okay, I'll end with this. Thanks. That, you know, that honesty and that willingness to surrender to what the real solution is for me is brings me recovery today. And with that, I pass. Thanks so much. Have a blessed day, everyone.
Thanks so much, Rivka R. Next, we have Esther K. followed by Liz S. Please share, Esther. Let us know where you're calling from.
Hi, I'm Esther K. from Georgia. How are you, everybody? I'm grateful recovering today. 41 days of abstinence, believe it or not. I went through my first ever 59 years of my Passover abstinence, and that was a really miracle. With cancer recovering, I'm starting radiation and a lot of fear and a lot of scare. But you know what? I know I have a solution. I know I have a higher power, and I don't have to worry what I'm going to eat because I'm already eating healthy. I never felt that in my mind I would go through this ordeal with so much, you know, like just taking a shower, it's difficult. Because I have all these marking and stuff that I can unread them and stuff. So, but now I'm saying, okay, this is what God wants. Fine, I'm going to continue. And today I have an appointment with my psychiatrist to see if I have to change my medication, how I'm going to do. But I'm focusing in recovery. I'm focusing how I can help others, how I can get out of my selfishness. And yes, if I need to go to sleep, I 8 o'clock at night, okay, I'll go to sleep at 8 o'clock at night, but I am living in recovery. I don't want to go back and live on my obsession. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Esther Kay. Where are you calling from, please?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next we have Liz S. followed by Bonnie B. Please share, Liz.
Hi, good morning. This is Liz S. from Oregon. Can I be heard? I'm assuming I can.
Yes, you can be heard.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your service. Thank you, everyone, for your incredible shares this morning and for the lead reader. You know, I can't eat one meal and expect that it's going to last for the rest of my life. Why do I think that I can have one spiritual experience and have it last for the rest of my life without repeating what my footwork on a daily basis? Nature doesn't even function like that. I mean, in order, the only way nature continues to be what it is, the only way the human race continues, blah, 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 everything, is if you procreate. So you got to start over and do it periodically. And with this disease, it's like eating. Oddly enough, it's got to be done every day. I got to do it the same way. If I want the same, I mean, there's a saying, if you something like, if you don't want what you got to do something differently. The flip side of that is if you want what you had yesterday, you got to do it today, you know? So I need the weigh and measure. I need to be in daily contact with my sponsor. I need to daily live in 10, 11, and 12, flat out. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to do like the rest of the world does, which is to continue what I do.
I used to live a very up and down, emotionally labile life. And that was not a good thing for my overall sense of well-being. I had to give up the highs and lows to be able to live consistently. Same thing with the darn food. Same thing. I got to give up the highs and lows. I had to give up the sugar and the white flour for me. Those were alcoholic things. I needed to weigh and measure. I needed to be in constant contact with my sponsor. That's what I have to do every day. Footwork, footwork, footwork. I mean, muscles atrophy, right? Doesn't make sense that everything else doesn't do the same thing. So here I am on the meeting, and I'm so glad I'm here. And thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks so much, Liz S. from Oregon. Next, we have Bonnie B., followed by Jason K.P. Please share, Bonnie.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Thanks, Tina, for moderating, and thanks for all the shares. They have been stunning, as one of my dear friends will say. Bonnie B. from Florida, recovered today by the grace of God, living in the solution, and very, very grateful. You know, one of my favorite pages. I have so many favorite pages in this book, but on page 427, and I share it often with people, toward the top, it says, if you're an apple, you can be the best apple you can be, but you can never be an orange. I was an apple, all right, and for the first time, I understood that I had spent my whole life trying to be an orange. This was the deal. This was the deal. I wanted something different than my DNA presented to me. I have a DNA. I have a gene pool. It's not a mistake. I'm fully confident that God knew I had this DNA when he created me. It's not a mistake. It's just that I didn't necessarily want this DNA. As much as I'd love to have my husband's beautiful blue eyes, because we get stopped all the time because of his crystal blue eyes, I have hazel eyes. Even if I get blue contacts, I will not have blue eyes. I will have hazel eyes. So I have to fully concede. There can be no lurking notion whatsoever that I can go back and do something that my DNA screams I can't. I have severe reaction to poison ivy. I've been hospitalized twice for it. For years, I would go near no one's pets. I would not walk into the woods. I didn't have any issue with poison ivy. I let my guard down 2 years ago. I went to pick raspberries, and I was not aware of all what was around me, and I got poison ivy on my legs. That chunk of time, man, did it pull me back. I don't have the option to think that maybe I can go back to do what I used to do before this thing really hit me like a freight train. There can be no lurking notion, no theory, no belief that I don't have this DNA. All I have to do is look at my past. Yes, this is my DNA. Not good, not bad. I have to acknowledge it, lean in. And then as others have said, and I truly believe this with all of my heart, I didn't come in and I thought people that said it needed the straitjacket. But with all of my heart, I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater because this program has brought me to a place where I never could have imagined, and it's not about the number on the scale. It's about my relationship with my God. Instead of knowing of God, I know God, and that is so very different. And so I am grateful for each and every one of you, and I think with that I'll pass, and blessings to you all.
Thanks so much, Bonnie B. from Florida. Next, we have Jason K.P., and we can probably take one more after Jason. Please share, Jason. That's where you're calling from.
Hi, thank you. Jason K.P. from Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. This isn't my idea, but just for fun, I want to say this. What would a lurking notion Halloween costume look like? Somebody kind of whispering in people's ears, hey, you could do that. So I had a laugh yesterday talking to somebody about that. But I love this meeting because it's powerful when we share from this book, when we look at the text and we talk about the text and we relate it to our personal experience. I wonder sometimes, I've heard this saying, you know, when we're in a meeting, our disease is getting stronger, doing push-ups in the parking lot. But this one here says something a little bit different. He says, in a short time, he was as bad as ever. So he kind of went back to where he was. And it also says he was just where he left off. And he wasn't in 12-step meetings. He just was on the power of will during this time. And I'd hear this thought, oh, my disease is doing push-ups in the, you know, and I got to, and I start to go into a very, very common defect of mine. I got to do more. I got to work harder. I got to go faster. I did a meeting a day last week. I got to do two meetings. And that's a version of perfectionism. So, again, it's a powerful meeting because we stick to the text. And I don't see some of these slogans in the text, but I digress. This is really about step one, right? This is a step one issue, and putting it in context, Bill was trying to talk to the uninitiated, the unconverted. Why is it so darn important that we need to understand this? That we need to understand once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. If we pick up these foods again, even after a period of sobriety, we'll soon be in the very, very same spot we were in, and after a period of time in the disease, it's a progressive disease. I think, I'm just going to suggest this, it leads to a lack of a full surrender. We hear in other parts of the book, half measures availed us nothing. And we hear in other parts of the book that people who think they still have the mind of a chronic alcoholic, if they sit, you know, longingly in bars, thinking about the good old days and wishing and hoping they could, you know, experience the alcohol again, they're on shaky ground. We have the mind of a chronic alcoholic if we're thinking things, and I heard this once, I reserve the right to eat chocolate on my deathbed. To me, that sounds abhorrent. It sounds like I'd sacrifice my connection to my higher power to eat chocolate. Never, ever, ever, ever. It just sounds absolutely insane to me. So this to me, if you have any of these lurking notions in your mind, you know, someday, somehow, maybe I'll go back to moderate eating, you know, someday, somehow, you know, whenever I have these thoughts, and thank God they're fleeting and I don't struggle with an obsession of the mind, oh, that looks good. It's immediately prayer, right? I cannot fight this. I'm always, you know, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, once a compulsive eater, always a compulsive eater. I put it right to prayer, and it's become a very almost unconscious habit to turn to God in those moments. And thank God those are fleeting
reminder.
Thoughts. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Jason KP from Pennsylvania. So we have time for a three-minute chair. Who would like to take it? Anybody want it?
Nadia E.
Go for it, Nadia.
Hey, how are you? I can't believe I got in. Yay! I just was thinking about how crazy the compulsion was to eat like over 30 years ago. And I'm just so blessed, so grateful that I got it. I got this connection. And like I heard earlier, it's a daily reprieve. I just cannot rest on my laurels. As I'm driving, I always have to think that something can happen. Something can go wrong. So as I'm living, I have to remember that something can go wrong. And if I don't have that beautiful connection that I get every morning on my knees, then something will, like, actually, hold on a sec. Things do go wrong in life, but I have my higher power with me at all times. And when I feel that things are overwhelming, I can't do this, how am I going to get, you know, the nourishment that I need, and I start panicking, I need to stop and breathe and say, okay, God, I have no idea. Can you please direct me? You tell me what is good and what is not. And I surrender any craziness that wants to creep back into my mind. So I'm going to ask God to come with me and show me what to do today. I have things planned back to back, and I'm just focusing on one thing at a time. Going into the gym, going to do my workout, get into the car, and then the next right thing.
And I love you guys. Hope you all have a God-centered day. With that, I pass. And it's Nadia E. from Toronto. Bye for now.
Thanks so much, Nadia E. from Toronto. All right. Thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for today, Thursday, April the 23rd, 2026, the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,393. That's 23393. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And Liz S., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then.
I would be happy to. Liz S., recovered compulsive eater. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny.